Leute, habt ihr schon vernommen? Habt ihr schon gehört? Es gibt da einen Podcast, der euch Datenschutz erklärt. Endlich jemand, der euch informiert und nicht belehrt. Der euch an die Hand nimmt, wird es mal zu kompliziert. Dr. Datenschutz ist euer Retter in der Not. Dr. Datenschutz, euer Captain und Pilot. Dr. Datenschutz nimmt euch alle mit ins Boot. Mit Dr. Datenschutz wird alles wieder gut.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast Dr. Datenschutz of Intersoft Consulting Service AG. My name is Laura Stoll, and I'm a legal professional and work as a data protection officer for various companies. Together with wonderful guests, I share my impressions and thoughts of the world of data protection. And if this isn't your first episode, and for many of you, I know it isn't, then you know that this podcast is usually in German. But please do hold your horses. Next month, we'll be back in German, I promise. But special guests call for special circumstances. Even an English episode. So bear with me, because today I have the pleasure of welcoming a very special guest. Please welcome with me Ms. Anu Talis, Chair of the European Data Protection Board.
Thank you. And it's a great pleasure joining you here today to discuss data protection. And I hope that we will be able to address some of the topics that your listeners are interested in.
I am 100% sure we will. I have no doubts. I'm so glad you're here. I know that for people on data protection, European Data Protection Board is a companion that we all notice and the things you put out in the world. But I figured some of my listeners might not really know who you are. So I think a tiny introduction is in order. As most of you probably do know, Ms. Talis Anu serves as the Finnish Information Commissioner. Since 2020, she's the head of the Office of the Information Commissioner in Finland and chair of the European Data Protection Board. And before holding those positions, she worked as a Deputy Information Commissioner from August 2019 until November 2020. And before that, what I thought was very interesting, and I really just learned about you, I have to admit, you served as a senior advisor at the Ministry of Justice for over 10 years. And in this position, you actually led the implementation of the GDPR in Finland, and you acted as a representative of the Finnish government in the EU GDPR negotiations. So you've really been around.
Yes, I have indeed seen the GDPR from quite many different angles, and it's a text I'm really familiar with. Yes, you could say that.
I thought it was so interesting. And I mean, it's not necessarily like a requirement. I don't know how that is, in Finland, but you have a legal background. I understand you hold a doctor degree and a master's degree in law from the University of Helsinki, and you also have Master of Arts, I found out.
Yes, this is correct. And it's not the most normal thing in Finland either, that you have two master's degrees, but I do have the other master's degree in communication, in new media type of communication. I did this studies over 20 years ago, so the new media was something quite different what it is today. But it actually also triggered my interest into data protection. So it's
well, I don't know if you know that about me, but I'm a lawyer and a psychologist, so I always find myself being a little exotic. But I think you and me, we're a really good fit.
Yes, that's true. Definitely.
And I mean, this coming from you might sound a little weird, but I mean, you are a trained lawyer and you hold a doctorate degree in law. I mean, you could have been anything. At least I think this is something my grandpa would have said to you. How did you end up in data protection? How did that happen?
Well, it's a long story, but it was no coincidence, so to say. It was, I got interested in, well, it was more IT law. When I did my communication studies and the new media studies. And this triggered me to apply to law school. And so I was interested in data protection from the very start. And one thing led to another, and then here we are. So So it was something I actually was quite fascinated about from the very beginning. I was told back in the days, in particular when I started to work on my PhD, which is about balancing the public access to documents with the protection of personal data within the European legal framework. I was actually told that perhaps I should not concentrate on data protection because it's such a niche topic, such a niche sector of law. But I actually did think already back then that it's not niche. It's actually relates pretty much everything we do. So it gives you something new to discover on a daily basis. And this is something what really intrigues me in this field of law.
It doesn't get boring. At least it hasn't for me. And I hear that from what you're saying as well.
Yes, that's definitely something I can also promise to everyone who applies to my office that, you know, there will not be a boring day.
I can imagine that. I mean, of course, you know, you get your groundwork done, you know, the legal framework and you understand, you know, basic things. But then even if you just look at it from a legal point of view and, you know, don't even consider all the technical, well, inventions and creation, new developments, I mean, even from a legal point of view, it's still rather young legislation. So there's so much still to discover and new court rulings to expect. I think this is you giving good hope to young lawyers in that field, I think.
Yes, and I don't think that it will change even when the legislation will become more established because technical development always goes further. So we are always facing situations where we need to find new solutions. And this is, I think that this is one of the perks with data protection.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm a little tech nerd, as most listeners know, and I get really excited with like new gadgets and stuff like that. But I mean, if I'm thinking back about 5 years ago and someone would have told me developments in data protection in connection with technology and how that is developing, and now thinking back the last 2 years in terms of AI, couldn't have predicted any of it, except there's still so much coming.
Yes, and data is used so widely, and it's a very central element in our today's database, data-driven markets.
Mm-hmm, I agree. I mean, it's fascinating, sometimes a little scary, I think, and this is where the whole protection part kind of kicks in, but fascinating for sure. But maybe before we get into some of the topics, I think people know you're the chair of the EDPB, but I mean, what does that actually mean? Like, what does that entail? You wake up in the morning and then you get no emails from Brussels, just another data protection crisis averted. Like, I'm trying to picture your daily work. What does that look like?
Oh, it looks always quite hectic. What does it mean on practical level? Well, of course, something what we would always do and organize are the plenary meetings. But then the EDPB has also a lot of other work besides the plenary meetings, because all the topics which we handle at the plenary, they are prepared at subgroup level. And we have 13 subgroups. So it's a lot of daily work also at the EDPB level. Then besides the work of the board, there are, of course, very often different public engagements like panels, podcasts, and this type of speaking engagements. What I also think is very important in my role is to have the constant engagement with the other members. I think that this is an important element because we need to decide on quite complex, important topics and matters. So I think it's very important for me to know how they perceive different questions, different topics.
Interesting. And like, let's say I'm a young girl and my dream is to be the chair. How do I become the chair of the EDPB?
Well, first you need to become the head of a national agency, because only the head of national agency, so the information commissioner of member states, are eligible to become the chair of the EDPB. And after you have been selected head of a national agency, the information commissioner, then you must get majority of the votes when the decision of the chair is being made. So it's the members of the EDPB who vote on the chair.
Yeah, so your peers actually voted you in office.
Yes, indeed. It's the peers who make the decision.
I think that might be a really good feeling, trying to imagine those bright and very successful people and all of them to vote for you. And from that point of view, that's really nice. They must really like you.
Well, I hope so. And I agree, when your peers show confidence in you, it's something what I truly appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time I had to give a speech, like a talk in front of a real peer group, people that really knew what I was talking about. And I remember being so much more nervous than even with a way bigger crowd, with people that had no idea what I was talking about. Which, I mean, has its own challenges for sure. But I mean, your peers are, well, they tend to be more critical. And at least you don't get away with any nonsense. I mean, that's for sure.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And would you recommend the job? You think that's it's also fun and exciting? Or is it very difficult? I always imagine Brussels politics to be rather difficult, to be honest.
Well, I like this role and I have enjoyed every moment, but I wouldn't call it easy. That's not the word how I would describe that. Yes, I would recommend, but it's also important to understand that it's quite challenging to do two jobs at the same time, because you also need to lead your national agency. You need to be prepared to show the commitment. It's not a Sunday walk.
I bet it isn't. I mean, and the interest within Europe, I mean, even with the unified code as the GDPR is now in place or has been for a couple of years, I mean, the interest within the European Union, I mean, we can see on a daily basis, they differ quite a lot. We have a saying in German, I don't really know if it translates, but we have that saying, two lawyers, five different opinions. I don't know if you have anything like that in Finnish, but it's supposed to, you know, like explain that lawyers differ in their opinions quite a lot.
Yes, maybe we don't have this saying, but I definitely see where it's coming from. And actually, last week we had a Helsinki event here in Helsinki, and we agreed on different measures to find even more consistency among ourselves and to find more consistency in our work. We also addressed some of the, we also agreed to take measures to make the GDPR even more accessible for small and medium-sized organizations to, for example, with easily understandable guidance and this type of measures. So this is something what we discussed here in Helsinki last week.
Yeah, so it's still evolving again and again. I see that. I mean, on a more regular basis, I assume summits like the one that you just recently did in Helsinki are not your everyday work. But how does that work? How does the EDPB and the DPAs, so the Data Protection Agency, the national agency, how do they work together? How does that look like?
Well, national data protection authorities, they are the first contact point for individuals and very often also for the controllers, for the national companies, organizations. And then the EDPB's role is to ensure the consistent application and also to gather all the national data protection authorities together. And we also have the competence at the EDPB to make binding decisions in such case where the national data protection authorities have not agreed on an interpretation of a specific case. So EDPB has, in a way, different roles, but I would say that the common feature for all these roles is to ensure the harmonized interpretation of the GDPR in EU. And then some of the mechanisms, they are a little bit overlapping. For example, there are also so-called one-stop-shop mechanism where the national data protection authorities handle individual cases within a mechanism where all the national authorities participate in the decision-making process, or those national authorities for whom it's relevant. In these cases, it's the same members of the board who are normally also involved in the cross-border handling. And then if no agreement is found in the cross-border handling, then EDPB acts as a dispute resolution mechanism. So it's different mechanisms, but very often there are same stakeholders who are participating.
I see. I mean, and you've been in office since 2023, right? Do you think this has evolved in office as the chair? I mean, this
yes.
Evolved already?
I think that it has. We did already a lot of efforts to, for example, to make our internal procedures more efficient before that. And I think that the results are starting to show. I would say that our enforcement actions have become more efficient. Now we are also getting the new set of procedural rules, which we then need to implement. And also when we started, when the GDPR became applicable, it was all completely new. And I think it's very important to realize that the type of body that the EDBB is was something completely new. So there was not a precedent. So we have actually created everything, all the mechanisms, all the ways of working together just when GDPR became applicable. And of course, the groundwork started before that already, but there were no ready-made models which we could have just adapted. So I think that's the hard work done already then also starts to show now. Like, for example, when it comes to enforcement actions, I do think that there is a lot of development. Mm-hmm.
I noticed in the past few years, you've been, you know, picking out certain aspects and like focused on that. I thought that was a really interesting approach. Let's say, I think last year it was right of access that you concentrated on. I think this year it's retention and like right of deletion. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you personally like to push, or is this something more of a collective decision? I've been wondering because I thought it's really brilliant. I thought, you know, to focus on this and also make this more visible also to companies to understand. At least I can tell you from a consulting point of view. I mean, I used you as an argument all the time.
Well, that's very good to hear. This is always a collective decision where we are focusing, and it started with the public sector use of cloud. And here, one of the reasons we started it was that when it comes to public sector, the EDBB's competencies are a little bit different compared to a private sector. And we wanted to ensure the consistency also in these cases, and also when it comes, for example, to public sector. And we decided to have this coordinated enforcement action. And after that, it was the data protection officers. So we have always decided collectively the topic of each year coordinated enforcement action. And normally it has some quite topical elements that normally has an impact of the decision we make.
Interesting. I mean, this is all, of course, we're kind of looking back a little bit how it has developed. And I mean, that makes absolute sense. And I agree, from my point of view, it wasn't from scratch, really. Data protection has been a topic within Europe way before the GDPR came into force. But still, I mean, I think expectations were so high. And I felt like a rerun of this topic. I mean, even though now we do have a specific act on it, but I think there are still numerous questions on safety of personal data when it comes to AI. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Like, how can we guarantee also personal data safety in an age of AI? And I feel like a lot of the discussions we've had the past 2 years, they reminded me a lot of the discussions we had when GDPR came into force. Mm. What do you think?
Well, to start with, of course, there is a lot of processing of personal data also involved when we are talking about AI applications, either when the models are created or then when the models are used. So this is also how the GDPR remains really relevant when we are talking about AI and AI Act. What I think is important here is to recognize this at the very start, to be able to implement the solutions which take the GDPR into account from the very start, because this is, I believe that this is possible. I think that the protection of personal data and innovations, they can go hand in hand. And this was also part of the idea when we here in Helsinki decided to work on easily applicable tools for small and medium-sized enterprises to make it easy for them to take into account the GDPR requirements. Then when the requirements are taken into account at very early phase, then it's cost effective. And then it's also, well, it provides results which are human centric, which take into account the, well, our basic values, European values, which I think that it's very important to always keep on the back of our minds. We actually worked on a so-called Article 64.2 opinion on these matters, or we issued that already before Christmas last year. It was in December. with the aim of providing the harmonized approach of the data protection authorities as early as possible. And now we are also working on other set of guidance, because this was quite targeted opinion, this Article 64.2 opinion.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, dear listeners, as always, if we mention anything, you know, with regard to paperwork and things that have been already published, I give my best try to include everything in our show notes for you guys, so you can look everything up that we talk about to make it a little bit more accessible for you. On that note, you know, being on a subject early on, I really thought you were really ahead of the curve when it comes to AI. I'm thinking especially the ChatGPT workforce you had in place really early on. What did you learn from that workforce? What were like your lessons learned, maybe even for future applications of that? Maybe not the same magnitude, but I mean, there's for sure more to come.
Well, this is, well, the ChatGPT task force, well, this has also evolved actually, because now we have also many other AI enforcement topics and interests. So this task force covers now more widely the AI enforcement. And I think that it gave a very good angle to then also see where to focus in our work later on. And for example, Article 64.2 opinion is part of this whole big process which we have had with the AI, with the goal of having the responsible innovations. So I think that this is the main goal here.
Yeah, I think that's an important takeaway from that experience. I mean, you already mentioned your gathering in Helsinki. I mean, the GDPR just, you know, in May celebrated another birthday, and I think I once said it's not a toddler anymore. So I gather like change might be necessary. Do you think the GDPR needs to change, or what would you change if you could? I mean, it's obviously not just up to you, but I mean, what would you do?
Well, I think that we must be very prudent when we talk about the change of the GDPR, because it's a entity. So changing a one piece there might have a effect somewhere else. We just gave our opinion together with the EDPS on the Commission's omnibus proposal to remove the small and medium-sized enterprises outside of the scope of the record keeping. Here, it doesn't really touch the main principles of the GDPR. I do understand the goal to ease up the administrative burden for the small companies. At the same time, I think it's essential that we still work on based on the European values, and we will not lose the core of the regulation. And it's also guaranteed in the Charter of Fundamental Rights. So it's not only the GDPR we are talking about here. So I see that this type of really narrowly targeted amendments are balanced. So I don't see that this type of really narrowly targeted amendments would touch the hardcore of the GDPR or the main principles of the GDPR. So this is in that way a possible way to see what amendments would provide a would maybe needed in this time of life. But at the same time, I really must underline that we cannot really lose the core. But I think that it's the most important to ensure that the approach is to have responsible innovations. This is in the heart of GDPR.
I think in one of the podcasts, I think it was our May episode, but I'll look it up for you guys and put it in the show notes as always. But I'm thinking about a conversation I had with Frederik Richter. He's the head of the Stiftung Datenschutz. I think this would translate Data Protection Foundation in Germany. They're independent and they put out a lot of good work, and they really concentrate on specific areas of NGOs and non-commercial organizations. And we did discuss, you know, lighten the burden. Sometimes seems very bureaucratic, data protection at times. But we both came to the conclusion that's not that easy that you just say, okay, you don't have to do A, because maybe there is another regulation within the GDPR. Let's say you don't have to have Europa a record of processing activities set out in Article 30. Let's say you didn't. And he said, which I, if I remember correctly, I hope I'm not talking nonsense now, but if I remember correctly, he was pointing out, but I mean, you'll still have to prove that you did all the things, thinking of Article 5, you know, Part 2. I mean, and he's right. I mean, it's still there. So it's not that easy to just pick a topic and then say, okay, this is really lightening the burden, especially with smaller companies or, you know, like NGOs or non-commercial organizations. I do see the point. And I understand that it's not just, you know, GDPR requirements that are put on them. Obviously, it's other aspects too. And at least, I don't know about Finland, but in Germany, we're really good with bureaucratic stuff. I mean, it sometimes feels like we invented it.
Well, I don't know about that, but the fact that the record keeping is actually something what helps you with the other requirements and other obligations, this is very true. It would still be a very, very helpful tool for the small and medium-sized enterprises. But this is exactly where we are trying to do what it's in our competencies as the data protection authorities, as the EDBB, what we decided last week in Helsinki, to provide these really easily usable tools for the small and medium-sized enterprises, which would make much easier then to comply with. So this is what we are doing here to ensure that it would at the same time be easy to comply with and at the same time ensure the level of protection of personal data, what we are looking for here in Europe.
Well, I'm very conscious of time today because you are a very busy woman. There's one question I love to ask my guests. I'm kind of sort of misusing it. It's a sort of a helpful tool used in psychology to open your mind to options and possibilities. Imagine there is a fairy godmother coming along, you know, and you have one wish and it just doesn't matter what it is. You have a free wish and don't limit yourself because everything is possible with a good fairy godmother, right? What would you do in terms of data protection? What would you change if it was just everything would be possible?
Oh, this is a very difficult question.
Well, I didn't intend it to be difficult.
Well, I don't know. Perhaps there are so many wishes that what would I pick? I think that the awareness on all the levels, and now I'm talking about as well as the really big companies, governments, and then also the small companies, to raise of awareness, and then also the understanding what your data could be used for, to have a common understanding what is actually done and what could be done with the data, and then the responsible use of that data from those stakeholders who are approaching these questions from that side. I don't know if that's just the one wish, but well.
Fair enough. Might have been one of my favorite ones I've heard so far. It's so easy to get caught up in the everyday lives of data protection and be like, oh, this, I don't really like this article. I want this to be changed. And probably that's true for a lot of people, but awareness is supposed to help and protect and ensure our rights. I think that's, I really like that. Thank you for that. And I mean, so, and if listeners are just as excited as me about you and the work that you do, how can they find out more? Are you on social? Maybe you have recommendations on what listeners should read. Tell me all the things.
Well, I of course think that all the EDBB publications are very good reading. And you can follow us in LinkedIn. And also, I think that our web pages provide also very, very good and useful information in a easily accessible format way. And we are also in X. So that's also one possibility to follow us.
I put all of this in the show notes as well. I'm really looking forward to checking out more. I can really recommend your work also on LinkedIn. This is how I keep up on what you do. You have a great team, Anu. They're really busy and I think they're doing a really good job.
Yes, I must agree with you. I do have a really great team.
Yeah, it's a lot about having good people and good support. I agree. Well, and I plan to say thank you in Finnish, and I tried a couple of days, but I really have failed. we have to make do with my English. Thank you to you for being my guest today. It really has been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me as well. But I can give you a very simple trick to learn to say thank you in Finnish. I have a member from, well, a British national in my team, and he said that he has learned to say kiitos in a way that ki, and tos. So,
kiitos, Anu. Okay. Yeah, because I tried to do it with Google Translator and I had it on repeat and again and again. And every time I felt like I sounded worse. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to insult you with that bad Finnish. I've been trying to.
Well, I'm sure that it didn't have been good in any ways, but there are some tricks.
Well, I'm not going to forget that. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Thank you.
Well, and as always, we look forward to your guys' feedback. Feel free to comment on the podcast or leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And feel free to recommend the podcast to other interested listeners. We appreciate every single subscriber. We are already planning a next episode, so stay tuned. Exciting things are coming your way. And by the way, of course, you can also find me on LinkedIn. Feel free to follow me. That way you don't miss any updates on the podcast. And of course, the podcast wouldn't be possible without our producer, Ole Wohlers. And for more information on data protection, do check out our blog. I'll link it for you in the show notes. I'm not going to do the whole www thing today in English, as I usually do, but you'll find our blog and all the essential links in the show notes. And you can also find us on Blue Sky and Mastodon. And that's pretty much it for today. Bye, guys, and see you next time. Thank you, Anu, for being here.
Thank you.